This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Welcome all. Welcome everybody to Eat My Sports Radio Edition.
I am your incumbent sports czar, Craig Fosdale, and with me, my PIC, my running mate, and my Eskimo brother, Carmelo Camilleri.
That's me.
We are super excited to be here and ready to get revved up. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We've got a 60-game fantasy baseball sprint, and for those that play fantasy baseball, get ready for tips to win your league. Sports are back, and so is betting. We're going to help you earn some extra cash, and on top of that, we're going to help you become a better you. Mindset is everything in this world. Okay, so we're going to help with mindset.
And on top of that, we've got a beautiful Your Opinion Sucks debate ready to go. Offense versus defense. Martez, hit the music.
Start it off.
The Eat My Sports duo absolutely loves fantasy baseball. We have an innate passion for the seasonal grind. We have our hands in a 16-team dynasty league, as well as a 12-team, 12-keeper league. And I finished in first each of the last three seasonal leagues that I've done as well. And there's a reason for that. Players are simply stocks. And you want to make sure that you have valuable stocks with potential for gain. We love going after guys who cost $5 but could blossom into a $50 stock. There's crystal clear metrics to assess the value and profit potential, both superficially and sabermetrically. Our metrics and our goal is to assess and to provide you with more reasons to listen to this show. So we want to make sure that we're spot on with these guys. So we're going to give you some high upside profit potential guys that you can get at such a discounted rate as we speak.
Awesome. And first on our list is Corey Seager, shortstop of the LA Dodgers. Prior to 2018, Seager was a career 304 hitter. He earned Rookie of the Year honors back in 2016 and finished third in the MVP voting with 193 hits, 105 runs, and became the first Dodger shortstop to hit 25 home runs in a season. He followed up that awesome 2016 season, hitting 295 with 22 home runs. Seager's value has tailed off recently due to a Tommy John elbow surgery in 2018, but he came back in 2019 with a vengeance. Low-key, he led the NL in doubles with 44 in only 134 games, had 19 home runs, 87 RBIs, and a .483 slugging percentage.
As evident by his 2019,
he's absolutely ready to rejoin the ranks of the premier fantasy shortstops. Buy him now before he gets too hot in seasonal leagues and before he hits his prime in dynasty leagues.
Absolutely. I'm definitely a big fan of Seager, but who else I'm a big fan of is your boy who you introduced me to, Denelson Lamet. Lamet has been super injury prone. He even had Tommy John surgery, just like Seager. And coming into 2020, Lamet had only pitched 186 and a third innings in his entire MLB career. But with that being said, he had a whopping 244 strikeouts, and he has a career 11.8 K per nine right now, which I know is a small sample size, but that's higher than anyone ever with at least 1,000 innings pitched. We'll see how Lamet develops as time goes by, but we're completely buying it. Completely. He started the season with a five-inning gem against the D-backs, in which he struck out eight and only allowed one run. Even more impressive, Lamet's fielding independent pitching, which is a sabermetric ERA, removing fielding from the equation, was 0.43. He looks to have harnessed his ability, and a common trend in recommendations in the future will be to snag pitchers in their late 20s and beyond. Due to health issues that patients generally deal with, especially when they're younger and need to make mechanical tweaks.
That's a great point. And I think he's going to anchor the Padres rotation, even ahead of a guy like Chris Paddock, maybe perhaps ahead of superstar prospect Mackenzie Gore. But moving back to hitters, I want to talk about Dansby Swanson. He's a former number one overall pick and was traded from the Diamondbacks to the Braves. He never really impressed until the first half of last season. Now, home runs revolve around three things: barrel rate, how often you hit the ball with the barrel of the bat, launch angle, the angle in which the ball travels off the bat, and exit velocity, how hard the ball travels off of the bat. Swanson barreled the ball last year at 10.1%, the same level as guys like Mookie Betts and Gleyber Torres, and higher than that of Rafael Devers and Chris Bryant. He hit 17 home runs in 88 games, but wound up going homerless in his last 39, mostly due to a foot injury. When you consider his barrel rate and the fact that he went homerless, for the last 2.5 months of the season, that's incredible to think about. Again, you want to profit off of these stocks, and that's what you'll get with Swanson, who already has 2 home runs and 7 RBIs.
In other words, buy, buy, buy.
And on that note as well, a quick tip for those who want to win their leagues: be aggressive. It's a 60-game sprint, which means owners will start panicking after even just one bad week. Take full advantage of bad weeks. Make trades. Make a lot of trades, for that matter. Capitalize on getting more value and lock down your studs. People buy on emotion. And if you see that their team is underperforming in one area, but at the same time flourishing in another, they're probably feeling some type of pain. Be a predator and prey on that emotion.
100%. And value doesn't just start in the beginning of the season or the middle of the season. Value is an all year around thing. So even if we're 5 games into the season, make trades. Pounce on those opportunities now, because it's a 60-game season. A week into the season is a large chunk of this season. Never be afraid to make moves, even if it doesn't work out at the end. Be aggressive. The aggressive players always win. Now, another quick tidbit. For those that love their young studs, Toronto Blue Jays' world-class starting pitching prospect, Nate Pearson, made his debut today. And boy, did he impress. He held the World Series champion Nationals to 5 scoreless innings and induced 14 swings and misses on only 75 pitches. He struck out a healthy 5 batters and also only allowed 2 hits and 2 walks. Even more impressively, Pearson retired 14 of his last 17 batters faced, struck out 3 of the last 4 that he faced, and only allowed 5 batters out of 19 to hit a pitch out of the infield all game. The kid has rock star potential. If you're in a seasonal league, scoop him up like fresh vanilla ice cream. And if you're in a dynasty league, it might be too late to get him. You might have to overpay. And on that note, that's our fantasy segment. Next is betting. You want to start us off?
Absolutely. So, as salesmen, we absolutely love to educate and entertain at the same time, of course. And why not educate you on how to make a little extra money in your pocket? It's easy to say, oh, pick this guy, and oh, pick that guy. We're going to make it fun, educate, and prove to you why you need to go into your phone immediately after this show and place bets.
Awesome. And I'm going to start it off with another baseball-related topic, okay? Luis Castillo versus the Cubs tomorrow, July 30th, okay? Now, Castillo had a sub-1 whip, which is walks and hits per innings pitched, okay, at Great American Ballpark, his home park in Cincinnati, in 2019, with a 3.15 ERA, a 1.91 batting average against as well. elite numbers. He only walked one more batter and only gave up two more home runs at home in 2019. And listen to this. He nearly pitched double the innings at home last year, 125 and two-thirds innings compared to 65 on the road. His opposition is Yu Darvish, who is extremely rocky in his first start, whose worst month throughout his entire career has always been July. He owns a 4.70 ERA in July starts with a brutal 5-14 record. He also owned a 4.60 ERA versus Cincinnati last year, whose lineup only improved with the addition of potential second-half MVP in 2019, Nick Castellanos, who is also Darvish's teammate. The line hasn't come out yet, but no matter the line, the Reds are a safe and smart pick tomorrow. I'd put $20 on them.
I agree, especially since we own Yu Darvish in a fantasy league, which is great. But I would definitely take the A's against Taijuan Walker and the forever eternally bad Mariners in Seattle on July 31st. Walker has been horribly mediocre throughout his entire career, and his first start was, quite frankly, no exception. He's only pitched 16 innings in the past 3-plus years, and he looked extremely rusty in his first start. The A's mustered 5 runs without recording an out versus phenom Shohei Ohtani on Sunday. And now it seems that their play discipline and bat-to-ball skills are top-notch. With that being said, the A's had 7 batters hit 20 home runs last year. I'd put $20 on the A's.
Definitely. And as much upside as a guy like Walker has, and we'd recommend him as a potential pickup in fantasy just for the upside, he has been very rocky and inconsistent and unhealthy. The A's are the type of team, they're sort of becoming that veteran team. A lot of guys are developing, accruing awards, accruing great stats. That's going to prey all over an inexperienced pitcher like Walker. Now, basketball is back, everybody, and I'm sure we're all excited. Tomorrow starts the dawn of the most interesting stretch in basketball history. We're setting up for a couple games of seeding into what's going to be a tremendous playoffs. We've got potentially LeBron versus Kawhi in the West. We've got potentially the Bucks running through the East.
But this is a betting segment, so we're going to get into betting. So here's what to look for in safer basketball picks. There's a couple of stats and a couple of guidelines that we use and we strongly recommend. Melo, get right into it.
Yeah, so the first thing you want to look at is the assist-to-turnover ratio. You want to avoid any teams that typically shoot themselves in the foot. With that being said, assist efficiency is huge, and that's why teams win games. Betting is often about taking teams who won't lose. The more assists teams have, the more ball movement they typically create, and less ISO ball. But when you compare the two, it suggests efficiency in ball movement and stimulation on the offensive end. What do you got for us?
Rebounding rate. Generally speaking, you want teams that control the glass. Teams that can rebound on the defensive side limit second chances for the opposing team, as well as creating their own second chance opportunities on the offensive side of things. So when teams rebound more efficiently, a team like Milwaukee, for example, they slow the pace of play down for the opposing team's offense, but are able to create more fast break opportunities as the NBA gets faster and faster. When you control the pace of the play, you dictate how the game is played. What else?
Absolutely. So you also want to look for teams that have effective field goal percentage. Essentially, a weighted version of field goal percentage that recognizes that threes are obviously worth more than twos. Some people like to use points in the paint as a metric, but in 2019, three of the top teams in points in the paint finished tied 23rd in effective field goal percentage: Chicago, Brooklyn, and Atlanta. And they finished bottom 7 in points per 100 possessions.
So on that note, the game that intrigues us the most is Houston versus Dallas to start the year this upcoming next few days. Houston is -1 here, but ranks 29th in turnover percentage and 24th in rebounding rate. Dallas, on the other hand, is 5th in effective field goal percentage. And while Houston is 6th, Dallas is 1st in the league in 100 points per possession and 2.8 points per game higher than Houston in 2nd place. That's the difference between Houston and Philly, who is the 16th-ranked team. Dallas is extremely efficient, and that's because they rank 2nd in turnover percentage. So it's the 2nd best team in turnover percentage in Dallas versus the 2nd worst team in turnover percentage in Houston. At plus 1,
I'm throwing 20 on Dallas. Now, I'm going to jump the gun a little bit here.
I want to assess 2 future bets. And Mello, you can talk about the 2nd one here. If you haven't already put money on this man to win AL MVP, it's not too late. So if you go on Spotify and look up Eat My Sports and listen to our American League Bonanza 2020, I took Nelson Cruz, the 40-year-old slugger, or 38-year-old slugger, rather. Was he 38, 40?
He might be like 62 at this point.
To win MVP, yeah. He already had a 2-home-run, 7-RBI game. He's actually only one of 4 players ever, and he is 40, by the way, to hit for a 600 slugging percentage at 40 years old. Absolutely incredible.
He's not even listed
at the time of the start of the season as one of the top 10 picks to win MVP. If it's not too late, throw $20 on Nelson Cruz. You'll get infinite profit potential.
Great pick. And I definitely took him as well when I made my prediction. But with that being said, who I took here for my defensive player of the year in the NFL is Darius Leonard. He's currently at plus 2,900. Just to put into context, Leonard has played 2 seasons, was first-team All-Pro in his rookie season, and still managed to make a Pro Bowl last year despite missing 3 games. Pro Football Reference uses AV, which stands for approximated value, to sum up a player's total value in 1 number. Leonard has 30 AV in just 28 career games. Comparing that to the greats, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year J.J. Watt has a 112 AV in 112 games. And he's a 3-time Defensive Player of the Year. Aaron Donald has a 93 AV in 94 games. Leonard has a slightly higher AV trajectory at the moment. Throw $100 on Leonard, that would nab you $2,900.
And folks, betting is all about understanding trends, understanding stats, and understanding history. When you do a little bit of research, it takes you a long way. And we're not asking you to bet on these guys just because we want you to bet on them, but because stats always tell the story. Numbers don't lie. You have to understand that stats, people may dismay stats or dispel them as just, you know, oh, it's just stats. But you have to understand that stats are just an accumulation of historical events that have taken place. And the proof is usually in the pudding, almost always in the pudding. And on that note, that concludes our betting segment. Now, we're going to veer off sports a little bit. And I know Mello's super excited for this because this is right in his wheelhouse. Listen, you can say you want to be successful all you want. You can try to be successful all you want. At the end of the day, it comes with consistency, hard work, effort, and that all comes down to mindset. And that's Mello's forte. He's got a golden mindset. The kid is absolute steel every single day. So
take it away, my friend. Why don't you tell our viewers how to have a better mindset, not only with what they're doing in life, but outside of whatever they do?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. So I always like to teach people the fact that your mind is a very powerful tool. You determine how you want it to think and to believe what you want it to believe. Now, there's something in this world that people have called limiting beliefs. What a limiting belief is, it's a state of mind a conviction or belief that you think to be true that limits you in some way. Now, with that being said, no matter the situation, you want to flip any type of negative into a positive, especially in your personal life. Perfect examples of limiting beliefs are when you go out through your day and you say, I never can do that. I can't. I can't. Never. Instead, you want to flip that thought into, how can I? I live by a quote. And the quote that I live by is, when you do what others won't, you can have what others can't. And what I've realized is that in this world, 99% of people wish that they can have and can achieve what only 1% do. But at the end of the day, the true beauty is you're the one who's going to decide which of those categories that you're in. And with that being said, one of the most influential people in my life and my personal role model, CEO of my company called Your Doc, named Joe Brown, he lives by a famous Confucius quote. He who says he can and he who says he can't are both usually right. You will consistently hear people say things like, I can never do that, that's impossible. We tell ourselves stories that are usually true. You're teaching yourself and your subconscious mind to think whatever you think to believe is actually true, which is in your control.
1,000,000%. And it's a beautiful thing how powerful the mind is. You can will yourself to be anyone that you want or do anything that you want, right? Everything is an act. People always talk about act is it. Right, people in your industry, people in my industry, obviously, or in phone sales, both of us. Everything in this world is an act. How you act around your parents is how you want to act. You being you is an act. It's not fake. Everything you want to do is real. So how you want to act at work, if you want to be the absolute best salesman, you act like the absolute best salesman. You take on those traits and you take on that role. Everything in this world is an act. Another thing we're going to touch on, and this is a valuable point, thank you for shooting this message to me, is the power of words. Your vocabulary is part of the act, right? There's two words that need to be eliminated, and we're going to touch on each one. Number one is should, okay? Because when you say, yeah, exactly. The word should implies a lack of commitment to action. When you say, I should do my taxes, I should go after that girl, I should shave, I should go get a haircut, you're justifying the logic behind it, right? But you're not actually committing to anything. Obviously, you should do your taxes. But when you say you should do them, you're just telling yourself it's a good idea to do them.
I'm cringing, and if the viewers here could see me, they would see how much that word bothers me. And what you want to do is, because the word should, it's the single most disempowering word in the entire English dictionary. It should actually be removed from the English dictionary. You want to remove that word immediately. And when you say that word, it should make you cringe. You want to change that to the word need and must. I must go to the gym. I need to eat right. That is a word that needs to be eliminated immediately. The second word that we want to touch upon here is the word problems. Everyone has a problem. I have a problem. You have a problem. No matter who you are, no matter what it is. But that word needs to be changed to challenges and obstacles. Problems, there's no such thing as a problem. Because the thing is, a problem is just such a negative, such a disempowering type of word, but a challenge and an obstacle can be overcome if you truly believe in yourself.
Absolutely. And one thing that I want to imply that we did talk about on our Spotify podcast was the use of the word problem when conveying when we're conveying why a prospect needs our product, when they have a problem that they don't have that product or service. But that's the only time. Because when you have a problem, as Mello mentioned, it's disempowering. So when they have that problem, they need us to take care of that and provide them the solution and walk them to the light and show them the way.
Now, another thing, going back to what Mello said
about nothing is impossible, right? You can will yourself to be anything or do anything. Also, understand a very valuable life tip. Everything in life is negotiable. No matter what it is, never accept the first offer in anything, whether it's buying a suit, making a fantasy baseball trade,
or selling your car that you've owned since 1965. It doesn't matter.
And one recent example that we actually want to bring up is in our dynasty trade, our dynasty draft, there was a guy who was looking hard for pitching. Four of the starters and one of his closers on the IL right now, the injured list. So
he felt a lot of pain.
Exactly. So he felt urgency to make a move. What did he do? He took his best prospect, his best growth stocks, his best two prospects, and put them on the trade block, conveying that he needed to make a move. So what did we do as creators of circumstance? Jumped right in, offered our number four starter, Hyunjin Ryu, for a top 20 shortstop, a top 20 overall prospect, shortstop Bobby Witt on the Kansas City Royals. It's clear that Ryu, 33 years old, is not going up, but rather down playing in the AL East. And obviously on the downtrend of his career. Witt is the number two prospect, rather the number two draft pick in his class, and a booming five-star talent.
It's like Blockbuster versus Netflix to me.
Exactly. But the folly in all of this is that the guy that we offered the trade to accepted it from the first offer. We were throwing the trade out there just to get a response at him. Just to, you know, BS and
say hello.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, how's it going? But he loses because he accepted near immediately.
And it was a terrible offer.
It was a horrendous offer. And I know you texted me and we talked about it like a couple hours after.
Both of our eyes were wide.
I feel like I bought a Rolls Royce for like $50,000.
Or well, the greatest sandwich ever for like a dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah, no joke.
Good point.
At the end of the day, everything is negotiable. He could have gotten a lot more out of us. He could have gotten another pitcher, or he could have traded for that pitcher for a lot less. But he was so desperate, didn't act like a buyer, took the first offer, and now he's going to lose in the short term and the long term.
Absolutely, 100%. And I want to dive into another topic that applies to really any aspect of life as well. It's called the law of compensation. Now, another quote that I live by as well is that hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. What the law of compensation states is that you will always be compensated for your efforts and for your contributions, whatever it is, however much or however little you put into it. I mean, think about so many examples of, you know, we've watched videos on Kobe Bryant and we've watched videos on Steph Curry where these guys are talking about how they'll wake up at 5 a.m. and they're hitting the gym, they're getting out there, taking thousands of shots before the game comes. And these are the best of the best in their field. And then you see other guys out there who are just not putting nearly as much effort, going out and partying, especially in the off season. I even heard one story about Kobe. I don't know if I showed you this video, but he had just won the championship. The next day, he was in the gym shooting free throws. And the media asked him, they said, Kobe, shouldn't you be enjoying yourself, and, you know, relaxing and having fun. You know, you just won the championship. And he said, this is day one of the next season and ready for the next title together. Because there's always room for improvement. And that's why he has five rings. And that's why successful people put in more effort than everyone else.
Absolutely, 100%. And essentially, the law of comp goes in another direction as well. If you're struggling, let's say you do your job, you put 100% in, and you're still struggling. If you continuously put an effort, no matter what the cost, no matter if your day's going poorly, your week's going poorly, your month's going poorly, eventually it's going to come back and work out in your favor. And that goes for everything, outside of work, inside of work, whatever you apply that to, whatever you apply hard work and dedication to, it's going to come back around in good fortune. Do we have anything else on Mindset? Anything else you want to share?
I mean, we dove into the most important topics for it. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when you do what others won't, you can have what others can't. I've said it before. I'll keep saying it over and over again. That is one of the most important aspects to live by, one of the most important quotes. And just get out there and make it happen.
Yeah, and doing what others won't is a very important trait to recognize and understand. Separating yourself from that as a single platform once told us, quote, that sea of sameness. Everybody likes to conform to what is normal and average, and that's the opposite average because you're just stuck in the same boat as everybody else, that same sea. But when you go above and beyond, you do what others won't, you achieve what others won't, you work harder than everybody else, you work smarter than everybody else, you do more research than everybody else, whatever it is that you do, if you go above and beyond and separate yourself, it's more likely that the law of comp will come back around in your favor. And overall, that's the most important part of building a good mindset and a good head on your shoulders. You know, you don't have to be the best looking person. You don't have to be the smartest person. None of that matters as long as you dedicate yourself to something. You know, a hero of ours, Jordan Belfort, the Wolf of Wall Street, talks about in one of his videos, a guy who had, what, a 50 IQ or a 60 IQ? He was pretty much almost mentally retarded.
Pretty much all the people he hired, too.
Yeah, not very smart people. But it goes to show you, because that guy became a millionaire. What he basically tried to convey and did convey was that intelligence doesn't matter. Good looks don't matter. If you apply yourself and you dedicate yourself and you care and you give a damn, that's what's more important than anything. Just like this podcast. It's all about giving a damn.
Absolutely. I mean, 100%. At the end of the day, you know, we know about our prospects in fantasy baseball because we've put hours and hours and hours into researching and studying why a certain player has more upside than another, why one player may be a middle of the rotation, number three type of starter, but there's a guy right behind him who has ace potential. But it takes the work being put in, and it takes getting out there and doing others won't. And with that, this segment comes to a conclusion.
Now, I want to put on some breaking news sort of shoes here. I know that was really corny. Breaking news shoes. Juan Soto, national stud and World Series hero, has been cleared to play by the MLB.
And this has been reported by Raphael's Barbershop on Forest Avenue in Staten Island.
And also Daddy-O's Barbecue on Bay Street in Staten Island. Damn good barbecue food.
And that's it for our sponsors.
Yeah, but Juan Soto's back to playing. The only people that have COVID right now are on the Marlins. It's a very strange situation. Their games have been suspended, but really nobody else is for the most part. I know the Yankees Phillies were suspended, and they flip-flopped schedule with the Yankees Orioles.
Is this arguably better off for the Marlins because now they'll have less losses?
Very true, because it's not like they're going to accumulate more wins.
Exactly. It's just less losses.
We're fantasy gurus, but can you name me three players from the Marlins?
Pablo Lopez, Jordan Yamamoto, and Sandy Alcantara, and Garrett Cooper.
Yeah, and I'm sure our
Ryan Sanek.
No, none of those people.
Is this John Birdie?
Let me ask you this. What number are any of those guys?
And we're going to move on.
All right.
Let me tell you why your opinion's correct.
Interesting. So here on Eat My Sports, it's been a staple and a mainstay and a tradition of ours to go on rants and do debates. We love not so much arguing, but we love shooting our opinions.
Arguing.
Yeah, pretty much arguing. You know, we love to entertain, we love to inform, but most importantly, we like to educate. But we're not going to share the same opinions on everything.
You know, we're not robots. We're individuals. You know, we create our own circumstances here, even though that's completely unrelated to what I'm talking about. But anyways,
we have a little tradition here. We love to debate. We call it Your Opinion Sucks. And why? Because we love to tell each other why our opinion sucks. So today, we're going to shoot on a segment that we did on Spotify very recently, offense versus defense.
The debate that's been going on since the 1400s, we're very, very adamant about which one we choose here. Call in to 646-668-8672 to tell us why our opinion sucks. We're going to get right into it.
Offense or defense?
Absolutely offense. All day, baby.
Why?
When you turn on the TV and you're watching the Lakers play against the Golden State Warriors, are you turning that TV on to watch LeBron play defense and to watch AD play defense and to watch Steph Curry play defense? Or are you turning that game on to watch a shootout and to watch an absolutely incredible performance on both sides?
Well, yeah, exactly that. You're watching an absolutely incredible performance on both sides. But ultimately, what's come down to what's made the ultimate moments and what's really stymied the best teams are defense, right? You know the old saying, let me tell you why your opinion sucks, because defense wins championships. There's never been an offense wins championships moniker or saying. It's all about defense. Right? So, I mean, you've got the 85 Bears, you've got the 2000 Ravens, you've got the 2002 Buccaneers. I mean, the best of the best teams and the most memorable teams, especially in a sport like football, have been those of defense. You know what I mean?
I hear you. But let me tell you why your opinion sucks. What is the best era in baseball?
Definitely the steroid era.
And why?
Because there were more home runs than anything.
And what part of the game are home runs played and hit on?
100% offense.
Baseball itself has tailed off over the past couple of years. And at the same time, we haven't seen nearly the game that it was during the steroid era. And that's why part of your opinion sucks so far.
Interesting. Well, let me tell you why your opinion sucks. Because defense has gotten so dominant, pitching, athleticism, and defense, that those hitters could not catch up, so they had to artificially create offense. You have to look at the steroid era, and not only that, but the juiced ball era, where home runs are more prevalent than ever right now. You had two teams that finished one home run different from each other or ahead and behind each other, the Twins and the Yankees, who both set the record. And, I mean, you had those two teams. I don't really remember where I was going with this. But they were beneficiaries of the juiced ball, right, which was an artificial creation of the MLB because defense and pitching reign so supreme nowadays. Also, you have to take into account that the MLB and their ratings were stymied by the NBA and the NFL's prevalence. And also, when you look at, for example, the NFL, we talked about this in episode 2 of Eat My Sports on Spotify. The NFL has gone a long way in creating artificial demands for offense, right? Pass interference penalties, holding penalties, nonsense hands-to-the-face penalties by defenders. They've gone a long way in making sure drives are sustained unnaturally, rather than through running the ball, through passing the ball, because defense has become so damn good and so prevalent. And that's why defense is better than offense.
Let me tell you why your opinion sucks. When the NFL is calling for these pass interferences and increasing drives, are they doing that because of great defense, or are they doing that because more offense means more viewers, which means more money because it's better than defense?
Well, let me tell you why your opinion sucks. Because, again, defense wins championships. Going back to our debate on Spotify, you want to talk about the greatest players of all time. Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Bill Russell, right?
Will Chamberlain.
You can talk about Will Chamberlain. But I want to get
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant. Those guys were elite defenders. Michael Jordan was a 9-time first-team all-defender. Dennis Rodman, during the Bulls dynasty, and before the Bulls dynasty, was a 7-time defensive rebound leader.
But they didn't play anyone good, according to you, the Bulls.
but they were defensively dominant as well, more than they were offensively dominant. Scottie Pippen is an all-world defender. LeBron James has been an all-world defender. LeBron James's most clutch moment was not a shot, but a block. Now, let me tell you also why your opinion sucks, okay? Because back when there were four teams in the league, Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain played each other in the finals a lot, okay? They played each other very often. I'm pulling it up now, okay? Now, how many titles does Wilt Chamberlain have? How many titles does Bill Russell have?
11, but who has the titles? Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, or the better Celtics team versus the Lakers?
The better defensive team, because Wilt Chamberlain only played at the tail end of his career on the Lakers. He was actually a Philadelphia Warrior for most of his career. And Wilt Chamberlain has the record for the most points in one season with 50. He's got 100 points in a single game. He's been absolutely dominant on offense. But where Bill Russell made his calling card, there was defense. And defense wins championships. Offense is nice and looks pretty, but as we mentioned, it's about hard work. It's about consistency. It's about effort. And that comes on the defensive end of basketball rather than the offensive end.
Sure. And let me tell you why your opinion sucks. So, yes, Jordan was an incredible defender, and obviously I'm not going to try to discredit the greatest basketball player of all time. But with that being said, for his career, he averaged 30.1 points per game. So, of course, he was still an incredible scorer. I mean, he's really known for that last shot ever on Brian Russell, which was an incredible offensive possession. But with that being said, what are James Harden and Carmelo Anthony known for?
Their offense.
So James Harden averages 25.1 points per game, and you can call him a superstar in today's game, right?
For his career or the season? His career, right?
For his career. Mm-hmm. But you call him a superstar, right?
Definitely.
For Carmelo Anthony's career, he's not at 30 points per game either. So at the same time, these are players who are coveted by their hometowns. They were absolutely loved by their teams. And they didn't even play defense. Michael Jordan, yes, he played incredible defense, but you love to watch him for the offense that he put up. And let me also tell you why your opinion sucks. Andre Roberson.
You love Andre Roberson?
He is your favorite basketball player. We need to get his we need to get his basketball card.
We absolutely need to get his basketball card here.
Are we going to get his jersey when we place an order?
Yeah. You know what? I think that's a good idea, actually. Now let me tell you why your opinion sucks.
Okay.
I'm going to get into Jim Harden and Carmelo Anthony first, and then we'll address Andre Roberson here. So I'm looking through now the amount of time that James Harden has made the NBA Finals as a Houston Rocket. You know, when he became a superstar. Zero. Interestingly enough, zero. He's won.
So while you're looking that up.
Six series in his career. Go ahead.
How many times has he played the Warriors?
Let's see. Two.
And as you look that up, what are the Warriors known for doing?
Four. The Warriors are known for their offense and their defense.
And that's what you know them as. But how many times have we talked about Klay Thompson playing defense versus Klay Thompson shooting threes?
Fair point, but let me tell you why your opinion sucks. Okay, so going back to the 2016 NBA Finals, Western Conference Finals, rather, the Rockets had a commanding lead in Game 7. The Rockets proceeded to go 0-for-24 from 3. To end the game, they lost to the Warriors. The Warriors went on to the finals. Because the Warriors stymied them with their defense, and offense is inconsistent. When you play rock-solid defense at all times, you're more likely to be fortuitous.
Now, in that regard,
Carmelo Anthony, how many conference finals has Carmelo Anthony made?
One time.
So for all the offensive hoopla he's had and, you know, all the amazing shots he's made, it doesn't lead to any playoff success. And as a result, his offensive nature, his ball hog sort of mindset, it led to a villainous role in the NBA. Nobody really wanted to sign him. 3 years ago, he was an all-star. Now he's almost out of the league playing a piece role with the Lakers. That's why your opinion sucks.
And let me tell you why your opinion sucks. Carmelo Anthony played for the Knicks. I could end the argument right there. But with that being said, think about how many times he had to go through super teams. Teams like LeBron's teams and teams like the Indiana Pacers that were pretty stacked and, you know, all these other teams he's played.
I'm sorry, but the Pacers were not a super team.
They were pretty stacked. Better than, I mean, anyone against the Knicks is counted as stacked. But at the same time, yes, the Astros banged on trash cans, but do you agree that the Yankees have been a top three in the league since 2017 pretty much each year?
I would.
And what has been the Yankees' biggest issue in the postseason?
Hitting.
Yep.
Because in 2017, in games 6 and 7, when they went to the Astros for those two games – in the ALCS, they scored one run combined. Why? Because defense always reigns supreme. That's why your opinion sucks.
Incorrect. Because the Yankees did not hit. Had nothing to do with the defense of the team. Pitching and defense are two different things.
Pitching is defense. Pitching is not offense. Pitching doesn't create points.
We're talking about a shortstop fielding a ground ball. We're not talking about a pitcher throwing a pitch here. And it's not that the Astros pitched so well. It's that the Yankees didn't hit.
Let me tell you why your opinion sucks. In the same mold that pitching you think is not offense or is not defense, I'm going to elaborate this in sales terms. When you get the first objection, right, when a prospect says, oh, I got to think about it. I got to talk to my crack dealer. I got to talk to the homeless guy down the street.
You say, I hear you.
You want me to say that tomorrow? Let me tell you what I hear.
I hear you. But let me ask you this. Does the idea make sense to you? Do you like the idea? Right? And then you go with the first objection handle and you go into value. That's a pitch. That's defense. That's not offense. That's not asking for banking.
Incorrect. You're always on offense when you're objection handling. Defense would be answering their objection head on. So if they say, I want to talk to your partner, and I say, you don't need to talk to your partner, that's being defensive. That's playing defense. But when you're the one controlling the call and you determine where it goes, you're always on offense.
Interesting. See, I think you're more on defense. It's not necessarily defensive mindset. No. You don't need to talk to your wife. That's more so being aggressive.
No, that's playing defense.
All right, maybe you got me there. I'm trying to flip it a little bit in that term. But let me tell you why your opinion sucks, okay?
Because going back to the 85 Bears, the 2000
Ravens, rather, the 2002 Buccaneers, amongst other teams, you don't need a quarterback to succeed. You don't need a great offense to succeed. All of the greatest teams in football have been on the precipice of the best defenses, right? The most recognizable defense.
When you think about Cam Newton's 2015 season, his miraculous, 45 touchdown season,
stellar, they won 15 games. Von Miller and that defensive front stymied them in the Super Bowl. When you think about Lamar Jackson and his 25 approximated value season in 2019, people think, oh my God, he's the best thing since sliced bread. He's the next best, Hall of Fame quarterback. He's so great. They were stymied by the Titans defense led by Mike Vrabel, a former defensive player.
Interesting. So you want to bring up the NFL, And I'm just taking a look here. So in 2009, New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl. Their quarterback was Drew Brees. In 2010, the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl. Their quarterback was Aaron Rodgers. In 2005, the Pittsburgh Steelers won the Super Bowl. Their quarterback was Ben Roethlisberger. In 2006, the Colts won. Their quarterback was Peyton Manning. Yes, you do need defense to actually win and to actually get there. But without a quarterback, with a few exceptions like the year 2000 with Trent Dilfer, you're not going anywhere without a quarterback, especially these days.
Okay. And let me tell you why your opinion sucks. Because saying they have a quarterback is not a stat. Technically, it's a historical recollection of who their quarterback was, but it doesn't provide any sort of value. Let's start with Ben Roethlisberger in 2006. Who was the MVP of that Super Bowl?
Was it Paul Amalo?
No, actually. It was a 13-7 victory. It was Heinz. Oh, I'm sorry, the 21-10 victory. It was Heinz Ward who threw the touchdown. Who caught the touchdown from Antoine Randle-El.
I remember that.
Yeah. So, I mean, a little flaw in your logic there. Peyton Manning, when he won the Super Bowl against the Bears, they won that game 29-17. Seven of those points were scored by Devin Hester. The Colts defense, led by Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, held that team down to 10 points. When the Steelers won the Super Bowl against the Seahawks, they had the number one defense, led by James Harrison, led by Troy Polamalu, Ike Taylor, Casey Hampton. They had the best defense. Who else did you mention? Did you mention 2004? The Patriots?
No, I didn't.
I mean, when you want to get into the best coach of all time, all you have to do is talk about Bill Belichick, the greatest Tom Brady has been. I mean, the fruits of our labor were based on defense, first and foremost. Bill Belichick was the pioneer for the blitzing team, the Giants' 87 and 91 Super Bowl teams, where they basically founded the idea of this with Warren Taylor. He implemented that with guys like Mike Vrabel, Rodney Harrison, Ty Law, Richard Seymour. I mean, they had a laundry list of all-star players on defense. You know what I mean?
Fair, but at the same time, you and I both know, and we can't speak in hypotheticals. I agree with you. Hypothetical is not the way to look at this, but without Tom Brady, they're not winning any of those Super Bowls. I don't care how good their defense was. I mean, look at how good Jacksonville's defense was like 2 or 3 years ago, and they couldn't win because of Blake Bortles was their quarterback. I mean, there's so many examples of – I mean, look at the Jets. Look at the Jets in 09 and 2010. How good was that Rex Ryan defense? Yes, they made it to the AFC Championship because of their defense, but they didn't win a Super Bowl.
Who did win the Super Bowl that year?
In which year? 2009 or 10?
Let's go with both years.
The Saints and the Packers.
Okay. So let's talk about the Saints Super Bowl,
which was
infamous for which play?
Was that the pick six game?
That was the pick six. That was Peyton Manning's last Super Bowl. And then the next year,
it was a bad throw by Peyton Manning.
Fair. But the Packers also had the number one defense that year, scoring-wise.
You sure about that?
Absolutely. I'll bet you $3 on it.
I'll do a $3 bet on that.
$3 bet?
$3 bet.
$3
you
bet.
Said that they were the
number one scoring defense.
Yeah, I'll do a $3 bet on that.
Yeah.
You seem pretty confident in your tone.
Absolutely.
There is absolute certainty in your tone.
You know, it's funny. They were also the number one scoring offense.
Were they? You love that your argument really had
– Yeah.
It really got canceled out?
Here's why both of our opinions suck. Because let me get into it. I'm going to blow up here. First and foremost –
Wait, did you just say both of our opinions suck?
Yeah.
That's not how this works.
Hold on. So, first and foremost, the Patriots would have never won without Tom Brady and without their defense, but Adam Vinatieri was the real hero.
And what position does Adam Vinatieri play?
Special team!
Which happens when he kicks the ball, what does that happen during which part of the game, offense or defense?
Oh, technically he's special teams.
Right, but does he get to kick a field goal while they're on defense at any point?
It's technically not offense. He scores the points.
Right, but the offense is what leads them down to the field to score those points.
But let me tell you why both of our opinions suck. Okay? Because the 2010 Chargers are an absolute anomaly. So they finished 9-7, finished second in the AFC West, and did not qualify. And I'll tell you why.
Although they finished number one in offense and number one in defense, they were dead last in efficiency. They allowed 4 punts, had another deflection, allowed 3 kickoff returns,
oh my God.
And 1 punt return touchdown.
Poor Phillip Rivers. On top of that, they lost the record time 74 players during the season due to injury.
They probably won't even lose that with COVID.
No.
74 players.
Yep. And they were number one in scoring offense,
number one in scoring defense. The only team in NFL history to do that.
Well, this is really an outlier type of situation. I mean, that's never going to be the norm.
That's why special teams is most important.
Wow. We've never had a conclusion to a YLS before.
No. And punters are most important.
And I guess that's why both of our opinions suck.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on Your Opinion Sucks.
Tune in to Spotify on this Friday for more juicy content. We're also starting up our YouTube page, which will be under My Sports Live. You can check out this radio show, as well as all of our Spotify pages as well.
Breaking news, the Yankees win 9-3.
Go Garrett Cole.
Hell yeah.
LeMayu, big game.
Yeah, we're New Yorkers. We absolutely love our Yankees, love our Garrett Cole.
On that note, I think it's time to conclude our show.
Anything in life is started with a seed. A plant. An idea, even a person. Are we still on?
We are. And yeah. Every seed you find, and it sounded like you were on also. So, again, everything in life is started with seeds, right? And every seed you find grow. Some seeds grow faster than others,
and some flourish quickly, but some don't. Ella showed me a valuable clip of Will Smith, the actor, talking about how his father had him and his brother build a new wall in their shop. When Smith first started, he thought to himself, how the hell am I ever going to build this wall? But 18 months later, it was finished. And Smith's father looked at him and said, don't ever tell me you can't do nothing. This applies to everybody listening and everyone not listening. It's not about building the greatest podcast in the world or building the biggest radio platform in the world or being a gazillionaire. It's about each individual step necessary to get there. Each brick laid builds greater and greater foundation, and each brick can be laid perfectly when you realize the task at hand is never too big. Maximize your dreams, but minimize each step, and you'll be on your way, brick by brick. On that note,
I'm Greg. And this is my best friend, Carmelo. Thank you for joining us on Eat Life. See you next week. And stay hungry.
Okay, hit the music.
This is Open Talk Radio, The Flash.